Hi, Patrick Madrid here. Thanks for listening. Check out Charity Mobile and prayerfully consider making them your wireless carrier. Mention offer code Patrick and get a free phone. Go to charitymobile.com.
Compelling insights, unpredictable conversations, encouragement for your day. It's the Patrick Madrid Show on Relevant Radio.
Welcome. This is the Patrick Madrid Show, as you might have guessed. Patrick Madrid here reporting for duty. Thank you for listening. 888-914-9149. 888-914-9149. That's the number to call to be on the air with me. I'd love to talk to you. Cyrus, do you remember the gentleman who called in, was it yesterday? I think it was. And he had a soldier's prayer. It was very brief.
Oh, he's the Vietnam vet?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, that was a great call.
It was. Well, he wrote me an email after the show. So this is from Michael, or Mike, and he's listening on, I guess he's listening on the app because he didn't list a station. So here's what Mike wrote to me. He said, Patrick, I was the one who called you with the soldier's prayer. Your continued conversation on your remembrance of when you were around 12 about how the Vietnam veterans were treated struck right through my heart. I graduated high school in 1972 and enlisted in 1973, but I was not drafted. When my quote-unquote friends heard that I had enlisted, they started in with the baby killer remarks. I separated myself from them, and when I was discharged, I never went back to Denver, where I was from. I enlisted because from a very early age, I was taught about the threat of communism and saw the need to make a stand and to grow up. I know that Vietnam was about politics, too, and have learned so much in the years after the war, but I do not regret my decision. I never made it to Vietnam, as my orders were changed a month before I completed forward observer training, as the war was de-escalating by then. Thank you for your remembrances and for taking my call. Sincerely, Mike.
That is like really cool. Yeah.
Isn't it interesting? This was just my sharing a memory from when I was about 12, about 1972, as I recall. And for those who didn't hear it yesterday, this is all it was. I just remembered that during that time, with the anti-war feeling at very, very high, and our military people coming back from Vietnam after having been shot at or losing limbs or other injuries, and just all the terrible things they had to go through over there, as is true in any war. And they were being so badly treated and disrespected by their fellow Americans, not all, but many, being called baby killers, etc. I just remembered, I've never forgotten this, when a man who lived in our neighborhood, I didn't know him, and I don't even think I know who his family was, but my mom and dad did. They were neighbors, I guess. And so he was coming back from Vietnam. And so everybody hastily arranged a homecoming, a welcoming committee to be there. As I recall, it was about 30 people or so. And everybody clapped when he got off the bus, and he was in his full dress uniform, and it was a big deal, and he broke down crying because he knew that this was not what was normal for guys like him coming back from Vietnam. It wasn't the typical kind of reception that our military people would receive. So isn't it interesting? All these years later, what are we talking? 50 years later. 50 years later, can that be? And this memory rolling around in my head for all these years happens to go out on the air yesterday, and it, as Mike said, it went right through his heart. The connections that we make on Relevant Radio with these programs just astonish me in a really good way. So I'm happy for that. And thank you, Mike, for doing what you did and trying to do what you could at that time. I guess in retrospect, I'm so glad that you didn't have to go to Vietnam. You know, so many of our guys didn't come back. 888-914-9149. Let's go to Corey in the Twin Cities. In Minnesota. Hello, Corey.
Good morning. So, Patrick, my 9-year-old son is discerning the priesthood already and has been confused by our relatives who are Catholic but not necessarily true to the Catholic faith.
Okay.
And he kind of got into a debate with his 15-year-old cousin who is pro-choice.
I like this kid. I like him already. He may have his own radio show in due time.
Well, that's what I'm calling to ask. Is if I just would like to kind of give him some more tools because he feels so strongly in defending the faith. Do you know of any resources for apologetics for kids?
This is like one of those softball questions that I can just hit it out of the park. It's right up my alley, as they say, to use a different sports analogy. I would start, certainly at his age, it's the right time to start with what's called Friendly Defenders. Friendly Defenders. This is published by Ascension Press. And they are, it's a flashcard game. I think there are two separate iterations of them. And what I like about them is that, like, you know how kids like flashcard games? On the one side, mm-hmm. you've got the challenge against the Catholic Church or believing in God or what have you. On the other side, you have the answer. And these are easy for kids to understand. They're compact. It's not really complicated or anything like that. But what I really like about this is that the guy who created them, his name is Matthew Pinto, he did so with an eye toward helping the kids learn that apologetics, defending the faith, is not about winning. It's not about beating the other guy. And it's also, it doesn't mean that the person who's making the challenge is the enemy. That's why they're called Friendly Defenders. So the kids who are making the challenge, you see them, they have names and faces, and it's all, you know, it's cartoony. But they're nice, and they're smiling, and they're sincere. And your response to their objections is also smiling and sincere. So the idea is not not merely how do you beat down this other guy's argument. It's not even really that, but how do you respond to it adequately? But just as importantly, how do you do it in a friendly, respectful way? So I think it's brilliant. And I would start with that.
Oh.
Get the Friendly Defenders flashcards for this young lad. Now, you can also order
Wonderful.
Him. He can't do it for himself, most likely, because as a 9-year-old, he's probably not allowed to go on the internet, but you can. So I would go on the relevantradio.com/quiz site and order a copy of my brand new book called Inquisition. It's a Q&A book, and he can get into it. He may not understand a couple of the big words here or there, but I'd say overall he could read it and benefit from it. That'll give him a lot of background information. And you could order a free copy of the quiz book for him. No shipping, no handling, absolutely free. I bet he'd really enjoy that.
Oh, he would. Actually, he's we've ordered it, and he's really excited to get it. So thank
oh, good.
You so much
good, good.
For doing that, okay. making it available.
Can I offer one other suggestion? This is really good.
Yes, please.
This is by Jim Burnham and Father Frank Chacon. They co-authored these books. They're called Beginning Apologetics. Now, they're the size of a workbook. So it's like a workbook that you'd get in school, 8.5 by 11. And each volume covers a different topic. So there's one volume on, say, the Eucharist, another one on Our Lady and the Church's teachings about Mary, another one on the sacraments, etc. And I think there may be as many as 20 of them by now. I wrote the introduction for one of them. I think it was the one on Mormonism. But each of these booklets that runs no more than, say, 50 pages, probably less than 50 pages, it's a very systematically developed apologetics approach on a particular topic. And so if you wanted to go look at all the different topics and zoom in on some of the ones you think you might like, I would recommend those because they're well suited for kids who are already doing work in that way in school. I think it would really appeal to him. And then if it does, and if I'm right in my hunch, then you can get him more as he completes these workbooks. But I think that too would be a great resource for him. Those are called Beginning Apologetics. And if you go to your local Catholic bookstore, they should have them on the shelf. If they don't, you know, they can easily order them. Or you can get them online. And the author's name, again, Jim Burnham, B-U-R-N-H-A-M.
Thank you so much. Really appreciate it.
You're welcome. You're most welcome. Well, maybe call me back in 6 months and let me know what he thinks about all these resources. I wouldn't be surprised if he has his own radio show on Relevant Radio 30 years from now.
We'll pray for that, and we'll definitely call you back.
I'll be in
thank
heaven
you.
By then, chances are. Maybe he'll take my show. You never know. All right, Corey, thank you. Let's go to Cordova now in Rio Rancho, New Mexico. Good morning, Cordova.
Yes, my name is Gloria Cordova.
Ah. Well, the call screener put your name up as Cordova or Cordova. In any case, my apologies.
It is. But my brother is searching for his faith. I gave him my answer, but now I'd like to, I'd like your answer for my brother Ricardo, because it's important enough to him that he says he's ready to give up on God if I told him, I mean, if it's what I said. Anyway, his question is it even possible that God could forgive Biden and Pelosi for killing millions of defenseless, innocent babies in promotion of Planned Parenthood and their abortion sale of baby parts? Could Hitler be forgiven for his mass murders of millions of God's chosen people? If this can happen, how can heaven be contain this kind of horrific killer with God? How could he... Mm-hmm. They be ever be able, you know, he says, I wouldn't want to be in heaven with them. And yeah. And my answer was that God is a merciful God and he died to save Biden and Hitler too. But anyway, what?
Mm-hmm. Go ahead, Gloria. Okay. I think I got the question. Well, part of the answer is that it's for the same reason that God would forgive your brother and let him into heaven. Now, granted, chances are your brother didn't commit mass murder. Let's hope not. But he has his own set of sins, and any one of them is worthy of eternal damnation. This is why Jesus died on the cross to save us, because we can't save ourselves. We do not have the ability to save ourselves. If we could, then there would be no need for Jesus. Certainly no need for him to die on the cross to atone for our sins. So even though I think we could safely assume that your brother is not at that level of magnitude of sin that, say, Hitler is involved in, he has his own set of sins. And so fundamentally, the reason that God would allow somebody like Hitler to be in heaven, if in fact Hitler had sincerely repented of his terrible sins and asked for forgiveness, and it doesn't seem that he did, only God knows, but it's for the same reason that he would let your brother into heaven that he would let Hitler into heaven. It's the same fundamental reason, because your sin is not too big for God's grace. There's nothing you could do, even if you outdid Hitler, which would be pretty hard to do, but let's say that you somehow figured out how to outdo Hitler in terrible, heinous sins. There's nothing you could do that would be too big for God to forgive you if you really wanted to be forgiven. That's the real issue there. That's how great God's love is for you. So the other thing to look at here and to tell your brother is there wouldn't be a terrible murderer in heaven because he would have been forgiven. He wouldn't be terrible in heaven. He wouldn't be anti-Semitic and murderous and who knows whatever other pathologies were rolling around in that guy's brain. None of those things would be there because he would have been restored. He would have been forgiven and restored and healed by God's grace. This is what happens to all of us. Take what St. Paul says. Maybe you could share this with your brother. It is your brother, right? Is it your brother or your brother-in-law? I just want to make sure I have the right person.
No, it's my brother. My brother. He's the next in line of 10.
Okay. Well, God bless your parents. So listen to what St. Paul says in 1 Corinthians chapter 6. You might want to jot this down. 1 Corinthians chapter 6. Let's start in verse 9. Do you not know that the unrighteous will not inherit the kingdom of God? Do not be deceived. Now listen to what he says here. Neither the immoral, nor idolaters, nor adulterers, nor sexual perverts, nor thieves, nor the greedy, nor drunkards, nor revilers, nor robbers will inherit the kingdom of heaven. He could just as easily have added, nor mass murderers, etc. So all of those kinds of terrible, terrible sins, he's not giving you an exhaustive list, but he's saying, these are bad sins. So the next thing he says in verse 11 is, and such were some of you, but you were washed, you were sanctified, you were justified in the name of the Lord Jesus Christ and in the Spirit of our God. So the people he was writing to, some of the Corinthians, were scoundrels in their prior lives. They were scoundrels. They were sexually perverted. They were adulterous, bed hopping. They were idol worshipers. They were immoral in other ways. They were thieves. They were probably murderers among them too, but all of them encompassed in this statement here. He says, you used to be that way, but now you're not, because you've been sanctified. And that's what happens to every sinner who accepts Christ's free gift of salvation and forgiveness. And if Hitler had done so, we don't know if he did, and I don't think there's a lot of reason to think he did, but maybe he did, you never know, then your brother would see him in heaven for this reason.
But the reason my brother is questioning is right now we're in an election, and our president is promoting the killing of millions of babies, and we know that.
Of course we do. But rather than try to score a cheap political point, which this kind of sounds like it's veering in that direction, the point here, and I'm not defending in any way the heinousness of the things that Joe Biden stands for, and Nancy Pelosi for that matter, or any other politician, regardless of the party. I mean, if you do things that are heinous and immoral, or if you're promoting them and protecting them, shame on you. May God help you. May God have mercy on you. But my point really is, it doesn't matter when you fill in the blank, you know, whose name are you going to put in that blank? You want to put in Joe Biden's? Great. You want to put in Hitler's? Great. You want to put in some other person? Great. Put your own name in there. It's all the same thing. And the reason that anybody would go to heaven is because he or she accepted God's gift of salvation. That's the answer. I mean, ultimately, that is the answer. So if your brother is unwilling to accept it because he's so proud, well, how dare God forgive that guy over there? I wouldn't forgive him. Well, that's one reason why you're not God. Because God is love. And what did Jesus say? That in the story, I'll leave you with this thought, Gloria, in the story about the unforgiving servant. Maybe you should share that with your brother. The unforgiving servant. He has a situation where he owes a great deal of money to the master. I mean, he owes more money than he can ever pay back. And so he gets dragged in front of the master. Is he a king? I'm not sure. But whoever he is, he gets dragged in front of the master. And the master says, pay back the money that you owe me. And he says, I don't have the money. And he begs and he grovels and he whines. And so the master has mercy upon him. And he says, okay, I'm going to forgive your debt. All right, thank you. Wow, never expected that. So out he goes. He's whistling Dixie as he goes out into the street, super happy because he's not in jail now. And then he sees this guy who owes him a small amount of money. And what does he do? He doesn't pay it forward. He doesn't give the generosity to his fellow servant. He says, give me the money that you owe me. And the guy says, well, I can't because I don't have it. And he doesn't give him any mercy. And so he actually says, you are going to go to jail. And he has him grabbed and then sent to jail. So then the other servants see this and they say, this isn't right. So they tell the master, who has the first guy dragged back before him. And he says, you wicked servant, didn't I have mercy on you? And yet you're not willing to have mercy on your fellow servant who owes you a small amount of money. And then he has the debt reinstated and he throws him back in jail, or he throws him in jail, I should say. And then Jesus concludes this parable by saying the following. He says, and so will my Father in heaven treat you if you do not forgive your brother from your heart. And that doesn't mean he's going to throw you in jail. That means that you too could lose your salvation if you don't forgive others, like it says in the Our Father, forgive us our trespasses as we forgive those who trespass against us. So if you're not in the habit, not you, Gloria, but your brother, if you're not in the habit of forgiving people who sincerely seek forgiveness, then you're going to come up empty-handed when it comes time for the Lord to forgive you. Or so says Jesus anyway, and that makes all the difference. I'll leave it at that. I hope that's helpful. And I'll be right back after this quick timeout. My number is 888-914-9149. Cyrus, of all the things that have ever happened to you while you are playing video games, I have a story that I'll bet never happened to you before. You ready for this?
Yeah, my ears just perked up.
You're going to hope and pray that it never does happen to you. It did happen to one guy, though. I'll be right back. Catholic Order of... Hi, Patrick Madrid here. Thanks for listening to my podcast. In today's crazy world, finding companies that align with your Catholic values is a challenge. Your choice of cell phone provider matters. Cyrus and I switched to Charity Mobile, and you should too. Enjoy excellent coverage on America's most reliable network while supporting a pro-life, pro-family company. Use offer code PATRICK for a free phone. Don't miss out. Act now at charitymobile.com. Forsters is proud to sponsor the Relevant Radio Studio Line. For information about employment opportunities and flexible premium life insurance plans, visit relevantradio.com/Forrester.
Compelling insights, unpredictable conversations, encouragement for your day. It's the Patrick Madrid Show on Relevant Radio.
You remember this?
I see what you're doing here. Well, you know, I never played it, but my kids did.
Oh, you missed out.
So this sound glorious in my home. What's the point of the Mario Brothers game anyway? What is he doing?
Is he trying to get coins? The point is to
push
buttons.
Well, what I'm saying is, what's his project? What's he trying to accomplish?
He's trying to save the queen, man. He's trying to save the queen.
Oh, wow.
Everybody knows that.
I should listen to the Patrick Madrid Show more often. You never know what you're going to learn.
How do you know?
I really did learn something there. Yeah, I remember that sound wafting out of my kids' bedroom.
Oh, I
when
bet.
They were playing. It'd be more like the living room. They didn't have TVs in the bedroom.
Were you more of a Pac-Man guy? Were you into the Pac-Man?
I was never into any of those. No, I take that back. There was a time, and I'm honestly not proud about this. I think I might have shared it once before. I'll share it again now, since we're going to talk about video games. I went through a phase in my early 20s when I definitely did not have the money to blow. I was young. I was newly married. I had a baby. Well, my wife technically had the baby, but we had a child. And then, you know, another child and another child within the space of a few years. And I worked in retail. And much of my work in retail involved working in stores that were in malls. And inevitably, back in those days, there were arcades in the malls. And it just so happens that in one or two of the stores that I worked at, directly across from my store was a game arcade where they had the, you know, the Pac-Man and all those games. So there's like the siren songs, you know, the songs that call to you. I could hear them from the store. And there was one game, and really only one game, that I was interested in. That was called Galaxian. I don't know if you've played it. You might have played it back in the day.
Of course.
But it was kind of like Space Invaders, but more fun, and more stuff was going on. So, and again, I ain't proud of what I'd done, but this is the honest truth. I squandered a lot of money that I needed, you know, for other things. I squandered it to the tune of maybe $4, $5, $6 a day. Not every day, but most days I would go into the arcade during my lunch hour and I would just squander $4 or $5 because I'd spend 20 minutes, half an hour. That's it. That's Galaxian. And it's a fun game. I mean, I haven't played it in a million years, but it has no interest for me now. But at the time, it was kind of like my vice. My vice was to just mindlessly waste time and money playing the stupid game. And I think that's the way the games are designed. They want you to be hooked in because, you know, the colors and the lights and the satisfaction of blowing something up. So eventually I outgrew that and I look back on it with regret. I mean, there's nothing I can do about it now, but I look back on it with regret because even though by today's standards, those are, you know, pennies, peanuts, it wasn't peanuts for us. It wasn't peanuts for the Madrid family at that time. So thankfully, that phase only lasted a year or two, but I look back with some regret. So I share that by way of background, because you asked me, did I ever play video games? Well, for a stretch, I did. And maybe, you know why, Cyrus? Maybe that's why I never got into any of the other games after the fact. Because it's kind of like, yeah, I tried that drug. I don't think I want to have it anymore.
I think you just nailed it. It's like a drug where I had to quit cold turkey. I had to just step away from
the
games.
You had the same problem?
Yeah, mine was much worse than yours. So I had I never could afford the Nintendo when I was a kid, but I had friends that had it. So it was always at their house, spending the night, and just, we'd stay up all night playing video games.
Yeah.
And then when I finally, and then we had the quarter machines at the mall where I'd waste all of my money. And I would
those are the ones that I was doing.
I would go in there with no quarters and just watch other people play and spend hours. I mean, it's not only the dollars wasted, but the amount of time.
The time.
Yep. And then once I had my first kid was on the way, I was like, I have to grow up. I have to grow up. I have to get a real job. I have to get a real job.
You
got
to slap yourself in the face.
Yeah. And it was like a real wake-up call. And I put the video games in a box, and I've seldom looked back.
But that's smart.
Yeah. Now my kid, my son is 16, and I will play a game with him from time to time, and he destroys me. And he revels in it. He loves.
That's how kids are. They have that acuity, the hand-eye coordination that, you know, older people like you don't have. And if that's true of you, what does that mean for me?
Yeah.
I don't remember what it was for me that was the turning point. And it might have been that one day I was just standing there pumping quarters into the Galaxian machine thinking, how stupid, how empty and meaningless and stupid, and there's nothing to show for it.
Yeah.
I'm wasting time. I'm wasting money. I think maybe it would, a kind of a sense of embarrassment came upon me, and I thought, you know, this is stupid, and I'm not going to do it anymore. And I kind of turned cold turkey, just stopped.
That's good. You know, this is embarrassing for my friend back in the day. But when we were kids, I mean, probably like 15 or 16, and he had just put in some quarters, and he ended up, I can't believe this happened. He wet himself because he wouldn't leave the machine. And so all
wouldn't go to the bathroom when he had to?
Right. And so almost an adult. And he left. And all of a sudden, I'm playing video games with my friend, and all of a sudden he's gone. And I'm like, well, he just ditched me. And so I ride my bike the 3 or 4 miles home or over to his house. And I'm like, what happened, man? Where are you? And he wouldn't talk to me. And then his mom came out and is like, he came home and he wet himself because he
had an accident.
He had an accident, but a self-induced accident because he didn't want to waste a quarter. So that was a little bit of a wake-up call too of like, what's really important
here?
That
is amazing.
Yeah.
That really is amazing.
Sorry, Jake.
And you had to say his real name. Well, I mean, it just goes to show if you're not careful, you can slip into this addiction. And there are plenty of things out there that are good at addicting us. So here's the story, all of that to get to this. Guy in the UK, his name is Aidan Rowe, and he was playing his video game on his PlayStation around 10:30 at night, having a great time. And he gets struck by lightning. The doctors who treated him, because they took him straight to the emergency room. So his wife says, we got to the reception, and Aaron said something had happened and it may have been a lightning strike, and everyone turned to look at me. I was rushed through to the assessment room and they said it does look like he was struck by lightning. 9 doctors from different departments came in to look at him. He was put on a heart monitor and had some blood tests. His doctors believe that the lightning bounced off water outside, I guess on the street, and came in through the window. It doesn't say it came in through the bathroom window detected by a silver spoon, although silver is conductive. It just says it came in, they think it came in through the window due to the ground being too hard. How does that work? I do not know. And the lightning came in, zapped him. He was unscathed. He survived. He had a few cuts and burns on his arms and on his hand, but he survived it. Freak accident while you're playing video games. Think of that whole setup. That whole setup just to get to that. But that leads me to another thing. Have you ever been struck by lightning, Cyrus, while you were playing a video game?
Serious question?
Yeah, that's a serious question.
Yeah, no, I've never been struck by lightning at any time.
Not even once?
Not even once, Patrick.
Okay. Well, you know, it's not a funny thing because there are people who die every year, of course, and often they don't realize that they're in danger. Lightning can zap you even if you don't see lightning or clouds in the sky. It's a very strange phenomenon. So I do want to just mention as a footnote that the great St. Thomas Aquinas had a lifelong fear of lightning. And you may say, why would he have a lifelong fear of lightning? Because when he was a kid, check it out. He was a kid. He was asleep in his room. His family, they were noble and they had a castle and it was, you know, probably really nice. And he's sleeping in his room, and one of his sisters shared the same room with him. And lightning, there's a lightning thunderstorm outside, and lightning came through the ceiling and killed his sister in bed in the same room that he was sleeping in. She was fast asleep. Whoa. And she was killed by lightning. One other version of the story that I've seen is that the maid who was sleeping in the room with them, like a nanny or whatever, that she too was killed. So can you imagine if you're a little kid and you know that lightning came through the roof and killed your sister? So for the rest of his life, whenever there were thunderstorms, and there are big thunderstorms in Italy, he could be seen from time to time in the chapel, leaning his head against the tabernacle, trying to be as close to Jesus as possible. He was, you know, sometimes moaning or you know, looking very scared. So even the great St. Thomas Aquinas, with all of his intellectual prowess and all of his grace and his virtue, I mean, he's very high on in the food chain when it comes to Christian virtue. And even he had to deal with a fear that he couldn't control. And it was something from his childhood. Isn't that interesting?
That's wild.
He never played video games. Well. He never played video games. Yeah, that is interesting. 888-914-9149. Let's go to Nick now in Leesville, Louisiana. Hello, Nick.
Hey, good morning. I had a question about, I don't know how we go from blessed to venerable to sainthood. I don't know how the whole process works, sir.
Oh, let me explain it. Let me explain it to you, Jack, or Nick, excuse me. It's a simple thing, really. So if, let's say you die, and everybody says, wow, Nick was really a good Christian man. He was a Catholic, daily communicant. He helped people. And there seemed to be things about him that suggested that he may have had heroic virtue. Because maybe after you die, they found out that you lived below your means and you lived a very frugal life. But in fact, you were spending most of your money on helping orphans and widows or, you know, people who needed help, and they could say, look, I mean, he practiced virtue to a heroic degree. So let's say your parish priest says, well, let's see if we can get him canonized a saint because it looks like maybe he was a saint. And wouldn't that be great? Hometown boy makes good. So working with the bishop, the diocese files the paperwork requesting to open the cause of your canonization. Now, I think canon law, if I'm not mistaken, stipulates that it's got to be at least 5 years after you've died before they will consider doing that. But even that can be, you know, flexible. So let's say the time goes by and the congregation for the causes of the saints, which may now be a dicastery, they've changed the title recently, but let's say that they say, you know, we've reviewed this and it looks like maybe there's something there. So we'll open an investigation. We'll start the process and we'll see where this goes. So usually at that point, what happens, Nick, is then you would be known as servant of God. That's the kind of the entry level in this process. You would be referred to as servant of God, Nick, from Leesville, Louisiana. And then as information is gathered and people are interviewed and the person who's in charge of trying to dig up any dirt to find out if maybe you were a fraud, and everything checks out and everything's looking good, well, then they would move it to the next stage in which you would be declared venerable. Now, venerable simply is a way of saying this process is moving forward, and from everything we can see thus far, he is worthy of honor. He is worthy of veneration. And as Jesus said in John chapter 17, Father, I have given them the glory that you have given to me, referring to his apostles and to his mother. So the church recognizes, okay, he was a good guy and everything seems to check out. And so he's worthy of veneration. And then, and that would be in a low key kind of way. Then when the cause is proceeding, the next major milestone would be there has to be a genuine miracle that is attributable to you through your intercession. And this is where most of the time a cause for canonization basically stalls. It doesn't mean the person's not in heaven. It just means that for some reason there is no miracle. And when there is a miracle, the church goes to great lengths to try to disprove it. That's part of the process, is to do everything possible to prove that this is not a real miracle. This is explainable by some natural phenomenon. You weren't really healed by the intercession of this person. There was just some other way to explain it. And they prefer, if at all possible, that non-Catholics and even if possible, atheist doctors or scientists would be the ones who would handle the study of a purported miracle to find out and to be as rigorous as possible. Well, when all of those efforts fail to disprove this as a miracle, then the church says, okay, well, we've got a miracle, so we're going to now refer to Nick from Leesville, Louisiana as Blessed Nick. That's called beatification. Now, when you're beatified, it is clear, and you are now regarded by the church as somebody who is definitely in heaven and somebody who is definitely able, by virtue of that fact, to intercede for people, to pray for them, and thus people can pray to you. We don't pray through the saints. We pray to the saints in the sense that we ask them to pray for us. And then if you are responsible for yet another miracle and somebody else gets healed or some other miraculous thing, typically these are medically related, then the church would advance you to what's called canonization. That's when you are, as they say, raised to the altars in terms of canonization. Now, the interesting thing, Nick, and I've got to take a break, so I'll leave it at this. Your status in heaven hasn't changed one iota. When you go to heaven, the moment you enter into the beatific vision, you are now a saint forever and ever. Amen. All the people in heaven are saints in the fullest sense of the word. So if you're canonized a saint, that doesn't change your status at all. Doesn't make you have a higher place in heaven. You don't enjoy more of heaven. That's for us. So the canonization of the saints is a way for us in this life to honor God and acknowledge what he has done in his people. So hopefully that's helpful, Nick. That's how it happens. I'll be right back. This hour is sponsored by Solidarity HealthShare, the first to offer comprehensive sharing for prescription medications. Check now to see how much you can save. Go to CatholicHealthShare.com.
Keeping it relevant. It's the Patrick Madrid Show on Relevant Radio. Join the conversation at 888-914-9149. That's 888-914-9149.
Wow. All right, play that again because I wasn't prepared for that.
No,
I want to hear it. I want to when it drops off a cliff when you're not expecting it.
Keeping it relevant. It's the Patrick Madrid Show on Relevant Radio. Join the conversation at 888-914-9149. That's 888-914-9149.
All right. Does that pass muster?
That is good.
All right.
That is good. Now, people who are new to the program, they don't understand what's happening. So I want you to understand what's happening here. Play Maggie so they'll understand what we're doing and why. Yeah, I'm serious. No, I'm serious.
At the intersection of faith and culture, the Patrick Madrid Show on Relevant Radio.
Yes, that.
Oh, it's so unsatisfying that it's satisfying.
That's the whole point. You're just building to the point where it's going to resolve and then it doesn't. I don't know why, but I find that wildly funny.
Yeah, I do too. There's I don't know if I just done. Like I like your reaction to it or if I actually think it's funny. I don't know which one it is, but it doesn't matter.
Uncontrollable laughter. I've learned kind of how to control it, but that appeals to me. And there's a third song. What is the other one that you have?
Oh, like just wait. Be patient. I have a three rejoin limit per segment.
One of our producers is named Maggie. So it was fun a couple times when she was working this show and we would play that.
I think
I'm not
that's
sure
where
she understood it though.
She's I think that's where it started. That song. Was with her, and then you're like, "Hey, no. Why don't you just cut that off right there?" I'm like, "What?"
Okay, maybe I'll take credit for it. Sure, yeah. But I think she's too young to know the song from back in the day. 888-914-9149. Cyrus, I have a note here from Greg, just came in. He's listening in Minneapolis on 1330 AM. He says, Cyrus, I'm trying to say it the way I think he wrote it. Cyrus, Mario is trying to save the princess, Princess Peach, not the queen.
Cyrus. All right. He's correct. He's correct. Right. I'm under a lot of pressure here. He's correct. It's the princess. Did I say queen?
Okay. You
all
did.
Right. All right. My,
I'm glad I never make mistakes.
I was wrong. Greg was right.
Yeah. Okay. Let's see. A note comes in here. This is from the letter C. I think some people really want to be anonymous, and this is a good way to do it. And there's a clever Latin email address. See, here's the problem. If you don't put any kind of name that you would recognize, you wouldn't necessarily know I'm reading your email, but I guess you would in this case. So C, the letter C says, Mr. Madrid, I have received yet another look out, it's the end of the world email. This time it claims that the church has been hiding information, specifically a book called Revelations. A quick look at the index of the book, and I'm troubled. It seems to receive all kinds of accolades from Catholics, many of whom subscribe to the 3 days of darkness and non-approved controversial so-called apparitions, etc. In truth, I'm so frustrated by the inordinate emphasis on private revelation and the laser focus Catholics have developed on them in creating silly hoopla. That's a good word, hoopla. We don't use that word often enough. Please excuse my rant. Are you familiar with the book and or the author? No, I'm not. Thank you, friend, and your family, and that of Relevant Radio staff remain in my daily prayers of petition and thanksgiving, respectfully, C. Well, thank you, C. We do appreciate all that very much so. My advice would be, see, look at the effect this is having on you. It's irritating to you. It causes you anxiety, and so much so that you took time out of your busy day, for which I'm very grateful, by the way, to write an email to me. That's how much it bothers you. So my heartfelt advice is just ignore it. Ignore it. Delete it. If you see something like that come in, just delete it. If it's on Facebook and the person is, I don't know, haranguing you or something, you can mute that person so that you don't see it. And this is the problem with the so-called, prophecy end times industry that is alive and well out there. Not just among Catholics, there are Protestants who are deep into this as well. There's nothing wrong with paying attention to prophecy. In fact, the Bible says, do not despise prophecy. So we're commanded to pay attention. But just remember, and I'm sure you do, in fact, I know you do based on what you said in your email, just because some guy pops up and says, hey, guess what? God's speaking to me, or I'm getting locutions from the Blessed Virgin Mary, and here's the message. That doesn't mean anything. Could be entirely fabricated, could be out of his own imagination. It could be derivative of somebody else who might be a genuine seer in some bona fide sense. It could be any number of things, but these people are a dime a dozen. And so my advice would be, because in many cases there's a book to sell or a website to promote or a video to get clicks or whatever, if it's causing you anxiety, all the more reason to just ignore it, shut that off, turn it off, because it's not helping you. It's not enhancing your spiritual life. And there are some people, I'm not saying that you are C, but there are indeed some people who become addicted to this stuff and they sort of crave, what's the latest scare? What's the latest horrendous thing that's about to happen that only a few people like me know about? I mean, let's say it's real. Let's say the 3 days of darkness happens tomorrow. Let's say the great chastisement that some truly bona fide figures in the Catholic Church have indeed talked about. Let's say that what Our Lady said in Akita, Japan in 1973 is going to happen tomorrow. Punishment with fire, et cetera, et cetera. How does it change your life to get wound up and anxious and beside yourself? How does that change life? It changes it in a negative way because it's distracting you from doing what Jesus is calling you to do here and now. What are you supposed to do here and now? Doesn't matter if the end of the world is next week. What you should do here and now is be prepared at any moment to go to heaven by praying, by giving alms, by staying close to Jesus in the sacrament. If you haven't been to confession, go to confession. Pray the rosary, as Our Lady says. Be a good husband, be a good wife, be a good mom, be a good dad, be a good student, because all the worrying in the world, as Jesus said, is not going to change anything. You can't change the color of the hair on your head just by worrying about it. You can't add a day to your life by worrying about it. And I know from experience that most everything that you worry about is never going to happen anyway. So why worry about it, Jesus says. Tomorrow has enough to worry about for itself. It'll take care of itself. In the meantime, don't worry. So my point here is not that we should despise prophecy. We shouldn't. But we should have a healthy approach to it and recognize that if this form of prophecy indeed talks about something in the future, and keep in mind, too, that prophecy, also an important dimension of prophecy, is the Lord explaining something in the here and now through a prophet as to what is going on now. It's not simply what are the things that will happen in the future. It's partly that, but it's not always that. So this is maybe a tool at times that the devil himself likes to use, because if he can keep people off balance and keep them anxious and worried and fretful. I remember, and I was, 12 years old once again, probably around the same time that that guy came back from Vietnam. It was right around that same time that a book came out. And it was, what was the guy's name? Hal Lindsey. That's right. Hal Lindsey. He came out with a book called The Late Great Planet Earth. Did you ever read that book, Cyrus?
No, but I watched the documentary with Orson Welles as the narrator.
Oh, okay. And I never saw that.
And all of the things in that book of the time has come to pass. And look, the Earth is still here.
I read the book when I was about 12. I don't know how I got my hands on it. Maybe one of my Protestant friends gave it to me. And I don't even know if I asked my parents if I could read it, but I read it. It came out, I just looked it up. It came out in 1970. So Hal Lindsey was one of these evangelical Protestant rapture guys. And this was the first that I know of anyway, like the first big breakthrough book / publication that inflamed the imagination of millions of readers, and it sold millions of copies. I think it was millions, but it was amazing how well this paperback book did. And everything that he said was wrong. He had people so wound up. He had people not getting married. There were people who read this book and they thought, well, we better not get married because the end of the world is coming. The rapture is going to happen any day now. And he was talking about the Antichrist and all of the, you know, the revival of the Roman Empire and tying it to prophecy in Ezekiel and Matthew and all of the famines and the earthquakes and the terrible things that were going to happen. He was saying, look, guys, this is going to be right around the corner. You're going to live to see this. It's just about ready to happen. And none of it happened. 50 some odd years ago, he was saying this thing. Now, why am I using him as an example? Because he's gone on to his reward. And in the meantime, he created havoc for a lot of people who were not properly disposed to read something like this. I don't know that I was when I was 12 years old, but it didn't really bother me. It's not that we're supposed to despise prophecy, but we should be, you should be, I should be properly disposed. And I guess I'll leave it at this. If you find, and this is maybe back to the lady, man or woman who wrote the email, if you find that people who spend all their time promoting, you know, the doom and gloom and all the things associated with private revelation, and don't get me wrong, I'm not saying private revelation is bad, but there are plenty of things out there that purport to be private revelation that are not. They're just coming from the minds of the people who are saying this, or they're mimicking somebody else. There is, in fact, real private revelation. Fatima comes to mind. So I don't discourage people from at least being aware of it, and when it's appropriate to pay attention to it. But don't have a steady diet of that, and don't let it wreck you so that you're not doing the things that you really should be doing, because instead you're looking at websites or reading books or videos, and that's making you miserable and distracting you from what you really should do. If you find it has that effect on you, then I would avoid it. If you find that that doesn't have an effect on you, then okay, that's fine. But know yourself. That's my thought. 888-914-9149. Kathleen in Allentown, PA. Welcome to the program. We don't have much time, though.
Hi. Listen, I just have a question about an upcoming marriage, supposedly marriage ceremony of our grandson, and his fiance has decided to have a Halloween theme where everybody's wearing black, or people could wear a costume. And we, you know, unfortunately, what's that?
Are these people Catholic?
I'm Catholic.
No, the people getting married.
No. It's okay. Just like a civil ceremony, only they decided to have a Halloween theme. And
are they, now, let me ask you this question, Kathleen. Are they like unbaptized, two unbaptized people?
No, they're baptized. They've both been baptized.
But
in another
Catholic
church. Well, he was in the Catholic church, but they never followed up. Their family didn't follow up. We watch our great-grandchildren. We've known them since they were born, and they're up to 5 years old, and they're just getting married now. So when they're just getting married now and they decide on a Halloween theme, we're wondering, as devout Catholics, who have been on the red bus, by the way.
Israel?
Yes, in Israel.
Oh.
So I know
you. Thank you. Thank you for joining us on the pilgrimage to Israel. Hope you enjoyed it. Well, let me, just because time's short, let me answer your question. This would be a judgment call, but I would say no. I would come down on the no side, not so much because of the Halloween frivolity. It's frivolous and out of place for sure. But because you have a Catholic who's getting married in a way that would make this marriage invalid because it's not according to the canonical form. For me, that would be the sticking point. But yeah, I can see, I could say this is, it's not tasteful and it's not appropriate to have a Halloween-themed wedding. So for that reason, too, I probably would not go. Thanks. Be right back.